This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk. This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Shawley. Now, a little bit of news. When you are sticking your turkey in, when you've got your spuds on, you've poured yourself a glass of Bucks Fizz, I hope you're going to be listening to me on Christmas Day. I've got a special show, 10 till 1, on Times Radio on Christmas Day. Listen on your DAB, shout at your smart speaker, download the app. You know that. If you would like me to say hello to you or to friends and family, maybe people you're not actually seeing over Christmas, email me, matt@times.radio, matt@times.radio. We've done this for the past couple of years. It's just a really nice thing. We need lots of messages. But you need to get on with it because the show might not be entirely live. So if you want me to say hello to you or to friends and family or just want to get in touch, email me matt@times.radio with your Christmas messages and I'll use as many as I can in the Christmas Day show. Right, as we hurtle towards the end of the year, it's the last PMQs Unpacked coming up. Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer. Lots of them to talk about. Who emerges triumphant? Tim Shipman and I pause the action in real time to analyse the key exchanges. First, though, as ever, we kick off with our columnist panel.
The Columnists with Ali Burt, Alice Thompson and Robert Crampton on Times Radio.
Yes, and the last time this year we're all together. Alice Thompson, morning, Alice.
Morning.
And Robert Crampton, morning, Robert.
Morning, Matt.
Nice to have you both with us. Let's just, first of all, reflect on the news this morning of this small boat which has gone down in the Channel. A government source saying that three people have died, but perhaps 43 people have been rescued. Suella Braverman, the Home Secretary, has tweeted in literally the last few minutes, saying, "I'm aware of a distressing incident in the Channel this morning. I'm being kept constantly updated while agencies respond and urgently establish the full facts. My heartfelt thoughts are with all those involved." We're expecting a statement from Suella Braverman later. Coming the day after Rishi Sunak became the latest Prime Minister to announce a crackdown and a package of measures and whatever else. I mean, it's one of these policies, it's one of these areas, Robert, where announcing plans is much easier than actually solving the problem.
So everyone is discovering, a whole succession of Home Secretaries and now Prime Ministers. Yeah. There used to be a sort of season for crossing the Channel. It used to end in about September. And I think part of the reason that this has happened is that people keep doing it all year round now. And I think, I mean, it's awful and it's inevitable. And who knows whether this has happened before and we haven't found out about it. But those 43 people, given the temperatures, are pretty. I think they're lucky to be alive, and well done to the people that rescued them.
Yeah,
that could have been. It sounds like it could have been a whole lot worse.
Alice, what do you make of this? Because I mean, clearly, on the one hand, you've got the Conservatives who've talked really tough on this for 3 years. I was looking back, you know, Priti Patel in 2019 when she took over said one of her top priorities was dealing with this problem. And it's just got worse and worse and worse. And whichever way you look at this, whether it's from a sort of, you know, hand-wringing liberal perspective of all, you know, something must be done, or a hardline right-wing perspective of all, something must be done, nothing's working.
Well, the extraordinary thing is how tough the Tories have sounded when they're doing absolutely nothing. I'd actually prefer them to sound very soft and do more, which seems the more obvious way round, because what you want is them. It's a humanitarian crisis. You can see with this boat going down just that suddenly you realise that it's a personal human scale of it. It's so awful. But at the same time, they're talking tough and doing nothing. And the traffickers now, it's about £2,500, £3,000 is what you have to pay to get across. And at the moment, they're trying to get a lot of people across because they think the water's very clear and it's very smooth. So they're carrying on into winter. And it is appalling. And I think part of it was because they blocked off the routes by train and by lorry, which are now far more expensive if you look at their doing. But they've really got to crack down on the traffickers and really, you know, the France is the issue, is to stop the boats from going when they aren't seaworthy, but to keep remembering it's the people involved. And I just think that's what we've lost, that we've lost the idea that it is people involved in this, and it's children, and it's, you know, it's that if we don't actually do something rather than talking about it, we're going to get more of these boats going down. The weather is getting rougher after Christmas.
So the weather's getting rougher, the temperature's getting colder. Nobody listening to this could possibly imagine what it's like getting in one of these tiny blow-up dinghies and setting off across the channel.
No, I can't imagine it. I mean, people must be desperate, and people are desperate, and they've come... I mean, they've made a huge effort just to get themselves to Calais from North Africa and the Middle East. So no, we can't imagine what it's like. On the other hand, this is not how it was a few years ago when we were talking about a few hundred people. Talking about
more than 40,000.
And that it has to be stopped, but nobody really, and least of all me, has come up with a solution for doing it. But they still keep on. I think the time, you know, when they can kind of crack the whip and talk tough, that's kind of gone, really, hasn't it? I mean, Priti Patel did that for
a couple of years, and action.
People are very sceptical about it.
Well, no doubt, I suspect this will come up at PMQs a bit later on. Let's move on and talk about another headache for Rishi Sunak. Nurses going on strike tomorrow. Alice, and we've got stories today that the chief nursing officer, well, I think all the chief nurses from across the UK, writing to the Royal College of Nursing, warning that nursing leaders feel let down by the Royal College of Nursing, and warning that patients are being put at risk.
I think this is an impossible situation for nurses, because actually they know they're being paid appallingly, but they are going to lose public sympathy, and people now are terrified just before Christmas about going into hospital, staying in hospital. And because of the ambulance crisis as well, I think it's made people very anxious, and with strep A. So I think it must be appalling being a nurse, because they know they're really, really badly paid. They've had to go through the whole COVID crisis. They've had huge pressures put on them, and yet they shouldn't really be striking. They've got to find some other way, and we should be pressurising government to pay them more, because I think they really deserve it.
But where does that money come from, Robert? That's the big question.
We've talked about this so many times. You know, you settle, you give them a big settlement, and then that bakes inflation into the system, and then it doesn't go away. I agree with Alice. I mean, nurses are not like train drivers. Nurses are popular, but part of the reason they're popular is that they don't go on strike. This is the first national strike by the nurses ever, I think.
Yeah.
And they might find that popularity melts away when the first people start suffering. They say they keep, you know, they're providing an emergency service with cancer patients and kids and neonatal and so forth. But that the chief nurses are saying that might not be the case, and somebody will die who wouldn't otherwise have died, and then it's a question of who the public and the media blame. And I think the government's getting itself into a position where it won't be them. You know, that's the manoeuvrings that are going on when these strikes start to actually cost lives. It's a question of who gets blamed. And I mean, it'd be awful if the nurses, having come through the pandemic and been absolute heroes and heroines to us all, then lose sympathy over strike action. I mean, you can say that there are some professions or some jobs that shouldn't go on strike.
We'll look at that. In fact, we're going to look at that tomorrow. We've got a focus group, our monthly Times Radio focus group with James Johnson, where we asked some swing voters what they thought. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was much more nuanced than the sort of dirt is good, government bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's definitely, you know, shifting there. And I think, I don't know, it's one of those things, isn't it, where there's the sort of mushy middle is, we like nurses and we'd like to be paid more, but we don't want our taxes to go up, we don't want them to go on strike.
But there's also, since the pandemic, there has been a growing dissatisfaction with the NHS. The NHS is not the kind of national religion that it's sometimes made out to be. People are very fed up with the way GPs were in the pandemic and the way they've been since. Some GPs effectively turn themselves into a kind of telephone consultation business rather than a face-to-face.
Well, even if you can get that, somebody messaged in a minute ago saying they took I phoned 111 a couple of weeks ago, they phoned me back 17 hours later.
Yeah. So people are not necessarily thinking the NHS is wonderful.
Yeah.
Although they probably think, nurses could do with some more money, but then they might think that they could do with some more money as well.
Right, we'll move on. Up next, we're going to talk about Keir Starmer and Andrew Bridgen. And if that doesn't keep you coming back, nothing will. let's talk about your column today, Alice. You've written it quite, Keir is more ruthless than you think. He's sort of picking his way through things. He's taking hardline decisions and it's now all starting to pay off.
Yeah, well, I did it because we did a focus group for Times Radio, actually, with all the columnists, and we all decided that Keir Starmer had really been the winner of the year. But he was very much seen as being lucky rather than having done it himself, that it was all about, you know, actually the Tories had imploded, therefore he'd taken advantage of it. And if you look at his record, he has done more than that. It's actually not just a passive, we're going up in the polls because the Tories are a disaster. He's really much tougher and more ruthless than you think, and he's really forced his party to become winners. I mean, he's trying to bring them all together. They're all singing from the same hymn sheet, as we know now, because they sang the national anthem together and no one complained at all. And so he's actually been very disciplined with his party, and they've become very disciplined in turn, and they're much more rigorous now, and he has cracked down on any sort of dissent, really, which is a good thing, because the problem about Labour is they've never looked as if they wanted to win. And here is a man who desperately does want to win. And I think that's interesting. It's not just a case of the Tories losing. This is going to be a man who wants to win. The problem is we don't actually know much of his plan yet. We just know
that's the thing, Alice. That was what I've got to slightly disagree with you, which I know, given this is consensus.
Good.
I don't know if he does come across as someone who, you know, he's this extraordinary lead in the polls is almost entirely as a result of conservative idiocy over the summer. And I think it feels very, very soft. And not being Jeremy Corbyn.
I don't think it's analogous to Blair in 97 when Roy Jenkins famously said he was a man carrying a Ming vase across the lobby, and all he had to do was not drop it and he'd be in.
Yeah.
Everybody thought that was true. I mean, Ed Balls was on your show, wasn't he? Saying it's more like it's possible. The parallel is more with 92. And we know what happened then.
So I think we've got a clip of Ed Balls from the show yesterday. He was talking about the risk of complacency. Mm.
You know, in that period, 95 to 67, Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, they never really believed Labour was going to win. They were never complacent about that, because, of course, they'd lived through the run-up to the 92 election when Neil Kinnock was the leader and people thought Labour would win because the economy was having a big recession, and then Labour lost that election.
I should explain the background noise for that was because I recorded it on the ship, it's not a boat.
Yeah. Sheffield rally and all that.
exactly. And I suppose it goes back to my... I keep asking this question. Has Keir Starmer got no power? Is he keeping his powder dry, or has he got no powder? And so far, I still don't think we know.
Well, he's not Tony Blair. I think the Blair thing was a phenomenon. It wasn't just that people were fed up with the Tories after 17, 18 years. The public liked... You might not like to remember this, but the public liked Tony Blair for a good few years. They still gave him a pretty good majority 8 years later, 2005. And I don't think Keir has had that sort of cut through or popularity at all. I agree with you, Matt. I think it's pretty soft. I think he needs to. He can't just think it's going to implode. Not least now because he's up against a grown-up politician who has got some, as Alice says in her column, has got a lot of the same qualities that what he's selling is also what Rishi's selling.
Yeah. And what I think is extraordinary is that he has got this opportunity now, in that the Tories really have gone for the older generation, so they're going for the over 60s.
Yeah.
And I think Rishi's carried on with that, and you saw that in the budget, and you've seen it in the fact with housing, he's not prepared to build more houses. And that, you know, actually, Keir Starmer's got this chance now with the younger generation. Only 3% of, you know, under 25s are going to vote Tory, they say, and 9% under 50. But actually, a lot of them aren't just going to vote at all. I mean, I know...
Yeah.
You know, I think the younger generation aren't going to bother unless Keir Starmer does something serious. So if I were him, I would be focusing very much on the under 50s.
Yeah, it goes back to like the Brexit referendum. If the kids had all voted, it would have been very different. But they weren't enthused to vote because, in part because the Labour Party were pretty lukewarm about remaining.
Yeah,
under Jeremy Corbyn. So yeah, I think Keir or maybe other people around him, like Angela Rayner, who I think is potentially a huge electoral asset.
Yeah.
Need to stir up the youngsters. Yeah. And by youngsters, we're talking about anybody under 50,
under
really.
50, yes. Yeah. It's not sort of the teenagers.
No.
And is it that whole thing of Labour now seem to be doubling down on being boring? Maybe once or two, but if Rishi Sunak is offering boring,
yes,
then how do you...
And he's the one who's able to be more boring because he's got them. He's in charge of the money. Yeah. He's in government. He can do more boring things.
He controls everything.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. It's a great read, anyway. It's a great read, Alice. Let's move on and talk about... Andrew Bridgen, my favourite MP, he was in the House of Commons last night having a debate about COVID vaccines, making a series of claims ranging from dubious to downright nonsense about COVID vaccines using mRNA technology. Let's first of all listen to what he was saying last night.
Madam Deputy Speaker, silence on this issue is more contagious than the virus itself. And I'd also... Now, so should courage be. And I would implore all the scientists, the medics, the nurses, and those in the media who know the truth about the harm these vaccines are causing to our people to speak out.
Well, there might be a better explanation for the silence. It might be that he's talking nonsense. Well, let's speak to Abbas Panjwani from the fact-checking organisation Full Fact, who... sat through Andrew Bridgen so that you don't have to. Abbas, because he made similar claims like this in the Commons last week, didn't he? Take us through what Andrew Bridgen was saying and whether or not he's right or wrong.
Yeah, so at the end of October, there was a debate attended by a few MPs on vaccine damage, as it was called, vaccine harms. And at that point, I mean, Andrew Bridgen said things that were completely false, such as that mRNA vaccines were not recommended for pregnant women and breastfeeding women, when we know that they're recommended by the NHS and British Facilities Society and many other, you know, esteemed organisations. Last night, there was perhaps a slight shift. Essentially, Bridgen sought to kind of denigrate the vaccine's effectiveness and raise concerns about their safety, using lots of data, which is not necessarily wrong, but is data that is kind of inappropriate to use in these contexts. So, for example, talking about the number of adverse events that have been reported after vaccination as an indication of their kind of harm, when we know that lots of these adverse events are not necessarily connected to vaccination.
Yeah.
And the government has been very clear that they shouldn't be used in that way, and various other things that we can get to as well.
But so it's basically someone has vaccine, 2 weeks later has heart attack, does not mean the vaccine gave them the heart attack. They might have had a heart attack anyway. That's essentially, you know, to be simplistic.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's lots of, scientific papers which essentially keep doing this. They keep dredging up data either from real world kind of vaccine rollout or from the trials, which said, look at this kind of rate of sort of adverse events that were happening after vaccines. Now, don't want to be too flippant here, but I mean, substitute a vaccine for anything. I mean, adverse events are going to happen after, you know, anything. And the point of what our, you know, MHRA does, for example, is it looks at that data and then says, well, what are the red flags here? And it has highlighted red flags, and we shouldn't shy away from talking about genuine problems with the vaccines. We saw that with the clotting in AstraZeneca, seen it with myocarditis and Pfizer and Moderna. And people who are experiencing those things shouldn't essentially have their experience tarred with kind of the suggestions that, well, everything under the sun is caused by these vaccines because, look, someone reported, whatever they might have reported after a vaccine when it might not have been related to it.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because the MP stands up in the House of Commons and says all the stuff. I've had people emailing me saying, why aren't we talking about it, and tweeting and saying, you know, Andrew Bridgen's finally speaking the truth. And he just isn't.
No, I mean, the idea that, you know, he mentions the people in the media who know the truth have got to get it out there. But, I mean, the idea that we're sitting at our news desk and our Tom Whipple, our science editor, and our health specialists are sitting on this information, but for some reason choosing not to reveal it, is just absurd. And it's a bit offensive as well. Yeah. I think the problem with Andrew Bridgen is I don't think he's very bright.
Seconded.
I think he's this is not a causal relationship, Andrew. It's not even a correlation, as the stats guy says. It's you know, England lose 2-1 to France, and somebody has a heart attack the next day.
Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson there, and of course you can read them in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next is PMQ's Unpacked.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk.
You're listening to the Red Box podcast now. It's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
And here we are again, one final time. Tim Shipman, Chief Political Commentator from the Sunday Times. How are you?
I'm good. I'm delighted. I share a birthday with Richard Madeley. It's a shame he couldn't join us. I think that would have been
Richard Madeley unpacking PMQs.
Could have been good.
On for a while longer than it does normally. We've come a long way in PMQs this year, haven't we? We began the year with there were no parties, and now look at us.
About to have some parties, hopefully. The first normal Christmas for a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, those of us that at number 10 had a drinks do, we were looking around slightly bewildered, going, we haven't been here for 3 years. So there's a slight sense of normality returning, and that goes for the politics as well a little bit. We've got two sort of serious leaders who are trying to, you know, stake out their turf ahead of an election in, you know, 18 months, 2 years. And, you know, the dynamics feel a bit more like what we grew up doing. You know, you've got a government that's got a lot of problems, an opposition attacking on the substance, making life a little bit uncomfortable on the personality stuff from time to time. But it feels like the game is back to what we recognised when it was Blair and Brown and Cameron and those people, in a way that, you know, the Brexit years were turbulent and odd, and then Boris Johnson created a whole new level of parallel reality that, you know, and that was his political ability to make people, you know, issues bounce off him and his, you know, frame things in a slightly different way. But Rishi Sunak is a more conventional conservative than Boris Johnson was, and Keir Starmer is, you know, staking out his terrain in terms that, you know, people who work for Tony Blair would recognise too. You know, he's wanted to look competent, he's wanted to look fiscally prudent, He's wanted to get a grip on his own party. He's accomplished all of that. And now it's a straight fight to the election between the two of them. And, you know, we've seen over the last few months things getting a bit clearer. I think Starmer's sharpened his act up, is performing a lot better. And, you know, he's got a different Prime Minister not giving him the answers.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a slight, yeah, if you're, Keir Starmer's whole, you know, his main sales pitch was, I'm Mr. Boring, and isn't that nice? But it's quite difficult if...
If the other fellow is too.
Yeah, no, I missed it last week, because I was away.
Oh, I know, welcome back.
What were the drinks and nibbles like at number 10 last week?
I was on the mulled wine, which was
warming
and pleasant. I'm told the white was an atrocity. and in fact, someone from number 10 went down with quite a bad stomach bug. I wasn't that very evening. Unclear if the white wine was responsible. But I'm told it was warm and unpalatable.
Well, just... warm yet unpalatable. That's PMQs for you. Well, that's probably enough of that. People are doing their lunch. Get on the Times Radio YouTube channel. Get on YouTube. Search Times Radio. You can see Tim. Somebody's asking if it's cold in the studio, Tim. You're not staying. He's still got his... very smart jacket on. Here we go then. This is the last PMQs of 2022. Lots of Keir Starmer to ask the Prime Minister about. Let's go live to the House of Commons. It's question number one.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I join the Prime Minister? Our prayers go out to those who capsized in the freezing waters of the Channel last night. It's a reminder that the criminal gangs running those routes put the lives of the desperate at risk and profit from their misery. They must be broken up and brought to justice. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, tomorrow will be the first ever nationwide nurses' strike. All the Prime Minister has to do to stop that is to open the door and discuss pay with them. Yep. If he did, the whole country would breathe a sigh of relief. Yeah. Why won't he?
Prime yeah. Minister.
Mr. Speaker, we have consistently spoken to all the unions involved in all the pay disputes that there are. But I am glad he's raised our nurses, because they do incredible work. And it's worth putting on record. It's worth putting on record what exactly we have done for our nurses. Last year, when everyone else in the public sector had a public sector pay freeze, the nurses received a 3% pay rise. When the RCN asked for more in-work training, we gave every nurse and midwife a £1,000 training budget. And when they asked for nurses' bursaries, we made sure that every nursing student received a £5,000 grant. That's because we do work constructively, and we will continue to back our nurses.
It's interesting there that Keir Starmer, while reflecting on what's happened in the Channel, choosing not to go on that as an issue, presumably because they went through it all literally yesterday afternoon with Rishi Sunak's plans.
Yeah, that's right. But also it's tricky terrain for both of them. And, you know, I think while I wouldn't necessarily have expected Starmer to go on it, I think it will be Sunak whose hands are tied a bit, because he would have hoped to reply to a lot of stuff that Starmer was going to ask him today with, look at me, I'm being tough on migrants. And when you've got boats capsizing in the Channel, that sting is rather taken out of that. But telling also that Starmer talked about breaking up the criminal gangs rather than stopping the people coming. And that's going to be, you know, the difference between the two parties on the issue of small boats. The Tories still think that they're closer to the public on that one than the Labour Party, but I don't think Sunak's going to have much of an opportunity to make that point today.
Interesting that Keir Starmer going on the nurses' strike, saying that the only thing they need to do is open the door and talk to them. I mean... They do then have to then settle in some way. And crucially, Labour won't say what they would
settle on either. Well, I mean, the Shadow Health Secretary gave a very interesting interview.
Wes Streeting.
At the weekend, where he sort of said, you know, I've had problems with the NHS. So I'm waiting for a cancer all clear, which I've not had because the test results haven't come back. It's all very chaotic. But he's also said... You know, he had a bit of a pop at some of the NHS leadership and said, you know, we're offering you more staff. And that on the basis of getting that, you're going to need to improve the way you do things. And making the point that even he's had grief from them as a result of that. Yeah. So you've got a Labour Party that's acknowledging problems with the NHS, which it doesn't always do. Yeah, and interesting that Starmer's the one bringing up strikes, because again, that's been one of Sunak's sort of comeback arguments, that Labour's in the pocket of the unions. I mean, what neither of them mentioned, which I find slightly curious, and I would have thought Rishi Sunak would have made this point. Maybe he will when he's inevitably asked another questions about it. But the, you know, the pay demand is 19%.
Yeah.
There aren't many people in the private sector getting 19% this year.
Actually, the weekend, the RCN said, oh, no, that's only our opening offer, realising they might have gone a bit high. Well, Rishi Sunak carefully laying out that. Actually, in a way, we haven't really heard a lot from ministers, the detail of what they've done before. They did have pay rises when the rest of the public sector was frozen, extra training, extra bursaries and so on.
And in a sense, what Sunak can do that Boris Johnson probably couldn't, having, you know, done clap for carers and just chuck money at the NHS, Sunak has always said we need to be honest about the trade-offs here.
Yeah.
And he will be able, presumably, to make the argument that if you put up public sector pay too much, that then leads to inflation going rampant again. And if you look at the figures this morning, inflation has just dipped a little.
Yeah.
And the Tories hope that that will be the story of the first 6 months of next year, that that gradually comes down and puts them in a position where they can start to, you know, make some
ease
more political. They might have a little bit of money to spend and they can do some more, you know, what they would say see as more conservative politics, some more conservative economics. You know, it might allow for easing some taxes somewhere. Yeah. So, you know, again, if you put all this money into public sector pay, that all that gain is lost.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see if he tries to make a sort of macroeconomic argument.
Yeah, sort of taking a step back from that. Someone on the YouTube channel, usually listen on the Times Radio app, but thought I'd join you for the full sensory experience on YouTube. Wonderful to see that even in full HD, Parliament's still a chaotic Punch and Judy show. I mean, it's quite calm compared to how it has been before. I mean, unless it was referring to you and I. Let's go back to House of Commons. This is question number two from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, nurses going on strike is a badge of shame for this government. Instead of showing leadership, he's playing games with people's health. And there is a human cost. Alex from Chester has been waiting for a gallbladder operation for nearly 6 months. He's in so much pain, he's been off school since then. His operation has already been cancelled twice. His mum, who I spoke to this morning, is worried sick. When she heard that strikes could be called off, she was massively relieved. She's desperate for the Prime Minister to resolve this. All he needs to do is simply meet the nurses. Now, Alex's mum is listening to this. She doesn't want to hear him blaming everybody else. She doesn't want his usual ducking of the question. She's tuned in now because she wants him to explain what is he going to do to resolve the nursing strike.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's not just Alex. There are millions of others across this country, Alex and Mark, millions of others who will have their healthcare disrupted because of the strike. Now, the Honourable Gentleman says to get round the table, but we all know what that means, Mr. Speaker. That is just simply a political formula for avoiding taking a position on this issue. If he thinks the strikes are wrong, he should say so. If he thinks it's right that pay demands of 19% are met, then he should say so. What's weak, Mr. Speaker, is he's not strong enough to stand up to the union.
If only you had your bell.
There we are. As you predicted, the 19% thing, and the fact that the Labour Party won't commit to that.
Quite. And interesting there that Sunak has been under relentless attack from Labour for probably the last four Prime Minister's questions in a row for being weak. And now he's trying to turn it back on Starmer, which is an interesting way of dealing with something where, you know, you've got a perceived problem. You can attack on the same subject and hope to neutralise it.
Flip it around. But I'm not sure apart from some stronger language, a badge of shame, playing games with people's lives, I'm not sure we got very far.
So no, and there is another argument in Sunak's locker that, you know, you've now got people within the NHS turning on the nurses. The chief nursing officer has said that they're in danger of damaging people's health, and so is the head of cancer care. I wonder if we'll be hearing about them in due course. But so far, I'd say this was a closer score draw than perhaps Starnwater would have hoped after two questions.
But it's interesting as well that the split on this was from polling last week from YouGov on the specifically on the question of nurses. 46% of people blame the government, 17% blame the unions, and 25% said they're both equally to blame. But amongst those voting Labour, 75% blame the government compared to only 11% of Conservatives. So it's sort of, but obviously there's a lot more of those Labour people because they're that much further ahead in the polls. So that's the divide, I suppose. Let's see if Keir Starmer can build on that. It's question number three.
Mr Speaker, in 12 hours' time, there's a nurses' strike. All he needs to do is meet the nurses. His inaction speaks volumes. As ever with this Prime Minister, it's Tory politics first, patient second. We've never seen a nurses' strike like this before. They've been forced into it because the government has broken the health system. Ask anyone in the NHS. They will tell you they don't have enough staff. 133,000 vacancies. And there's an obvious solution. Scrap the non-dom status and use the money to bring through the next generation of doctors.
Weekly
and
mention of non-doms.
That's
there.
What Labour would do. Why hasn't he got the guts to do it?
Mr. Speaker, we're already investing billions more in the NHS. We're already hiring thousands more doctors and nurses. But he asks about backlog. He asks about backlogs and the waiting times in the NHS. And yes, what he always fails to acknowledge is the impact that COVID did, Mr. Speaker. That's why we're facing pressures. But we do have a plan. Not just more money, not just more doctors and nurses. New diagnostic centres carrying out millions of checks and scans. New surgical hubs delivering more elective surgery. But if we'd listened to him, Mr. Speaker, the backlog would still be growing, and that's because we'd still be in lockdown.
We'd still be... What, now? We'd still be in lockdown now? Whew. That was a...
That was vintage Boris Johnson era baiting.
Once again, we've got slightly in the PMQ's groove, haven't we?
Yes,
topic, two or three questions in. It's non-doms. It's you'd have kept us in the European Medicines Agency. We didn't quite go there, but we were still in lockdown.
Yeah, I think the lockdown is an argument a bit like the one blaming Starmer for Jeremy Corbyn years down the track that I don't think essentially. Cuts through in a credible way with the public. He's right to talk about some of the stuff that they've been doing and wanting to do. I'm surprised he hasn't gone back to Starmer on what do you actually think of
this?
You know, I mean,
I know the Speaker tends to get cross if the Prime Minister asks questions, but if he just kept saying, would you give them 19%?
Yes, exactly. And also, you know, this whole argument about, you know, what Ed Miliband, back when there were strikes, famously did that. You know, for those of you at home near a computer, just go on to, you know, when you finish with us on YouTube, have a look at Ed Miliband doing his statement
everyone
about
needs to
strikes.
Get back around the table.
These strikes are wrong, he kept saying. And
we
he did it
put
about...
Put our differences to one side and get back around
the table.
Yeah. Again, and he just did it again and again.
Exactly. He was asked about 9 questions and the answer just kept coming literally identical because they didn't want to say, they didn't want to move an inch off this agreed line. And the same seems to be the case. For Starmer, he gets the chance to attack because it's PMQs. But,
I mean, sitting right next to Keir Starmer is Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, who is trying to keep an iron-like grip on spending commitments by the Labour Party. And the last thing she wants
Starmer sort of flexes a leg, you might see might literally see a hand come out.
Bio in the thigh. Because it was, £20 billion, £28 billion or something, if everyone in the public sector got an inflation-beating...
Quite a lot of money.
It's quite a lot of money. Here we go then. So go back. Let's see how many more sort of... It is Christmas, so maybe that's why we're getting repeats. Let's go back to question number four from Keir Starmer.
As usual, Mr. Speaker, he tries to blame everyone else. His department commissioned a report into the NHS, which reported on Monday. That report said we've had 10 years of managed decline. Yep. It was not COVID. Yep. Responsibility is sitting right there. And the reason he can't choose nurses over non-doms is because he's too weak to stand up to the tax avoiders. For 12 years, they haven't trained enough doctors and nurses. So we have the absurd situation of the NHS spending billions on agency workers to fill the gap. Why should the country have to put up with money that should be spent treating patients being wasted plugging gaps instead?
Mr. Speaker, let me tell the honourable gentleman what we are doing. We are actually listening to the independent pay review bodies. They want to undermine them. We've offered a fair pay deal. They can't even decide on a number amongst themselves. We're actually protecting the public. They're protecting their paymasters, Mr. Speaker. For working people in this country, it's Labour's nightmare before Christmas.
Has he got his notes muddled up?
I think
there?
We should just pause, have a moment
just
of silence.
Silence and personal reflection on how badly that joke dropped out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it must be a real nightmare for Keir Starmer being only now 20 points ahead in the polls.
Yes. Look, I mean, Sunak had some good binary build-up to that.
Yeah.
You know, we're protecting the public, you're protecting your paymasters. You know, we've offered them something, you won't tell us how much it is. But yes, he then spoilt it all with the nightmare before Christmas. I mean, it is the nightmare before Christmas, but to claim at this point that it's Labour's nightmare seems a little bit optimistic for a Prime Minister whose party have been in power for 12 years.
And actually, the big criticism, you know, the if anyone's been paying any attention to Labour's relationship with the unions, is they've threatened to take away money. They don't think Keir Starmer's been hard enough on them. He's sacked people who joined picket lines. It's much harder. He doesn't look like a sort of burning brazier union baron hugger.
No, and they've been, you know, the Tories are sort of, I think Angela Rayner's been saying Mick Lynch, the RMT guy, is a reasonable man. I think you can, if you sort of get, if they align too closely with the rail unions, they might have more problems than, you know, it's a pretty cost-free enterprise for a Labour Party to align itself with the nurses.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there we are. Let's see. Still got two more questions to go. Who knows how bad the jokes might get? Let's go back to the House of Commons then. It's PMQ's Unpacked. It's question number five from Keir Starmer.
Keir Starmer! There he goes again, pretending everything is fine. Try telling that to those on waiting lists or those that can't afford to pay for a next day GP appointment. After 12
because
years
Rishi Sunak
of Tory
pays
failure, winter has arrived for our public services. And we've got a Prime Minister who has curled up in a ball and gone into hibernation.
That's also quite bad.
That's quite bad.
On behalf of patients or nurses or everyone who wants these strikes called off, then surely the whole country is entitled to ask, what is the point of him and what is the point of the government he's supposed to be leading?
Mr. Speaker, he talks about COVID not having an impact. Ambulance waiting times for Category 1 ambulance waiting times in February of 2020 were actually completely on target, Mr. Speaker. COVID has an impact. And that's why, as the chief executive of the NHS has acknowledged, this government is serious about its commitment to prioritise the NHS. But, Mr. Speaker, let's just have a look at the NHS in Labour-run Wales, shall we? The worst A&E times in the country, Mr. Speaker.
Here's Starmer.
Okay, well...
Curled up in a ball and gone into hibernation was pretty bad.
I think it's... it's one all now.
One all on the bad pre-planned jokes. Rishi Sunak boasting that it's been, three years since they met the A&E ambulance Category 1 targets is probably not the boast that he might hope to be. However, him ending there on the point about the NHS in Wales, where we were discussing earlier midwives are going on strike... In Scotland, they've just averted a strike, I think, amongst nurses by settling with the unions. But the NHS in Scotland is not in a great way. This cuts across all parties, doesn't it?
It does, really. I mean, when the budget was coming out and, you know, they were cutting here, there and everywhere, but still chucking money at the NHS, one of my friends said, we're now a health service with a country attached to it. And frankly, you could spend almost the entire national income on the health service and still not... have it, achieving what people would hope that it would. And it's a, you know, it's a difficult area to make savings in. It's a difficult area to justify not pouring as much money into it as you possibly can. But clearly COVID has had an impact. What Sunak's not really explaining there is why. It you know, a lot of people will think, well, it's a couple of years after COVID now, and why is that stopping an ambulance getting people there on time? I mean, the short answer is there's a lot of people in hospital who haven't had the treatment they deserve, yeah. Which means that they're stuck there, which means there aren't any beds. So when ambulances arrive, they can't can't put people into the hospital quickly enough and go out and do the next job. But he's not really sort of spelling that out. It doesn't intrinsically seem like, on the face of it, a sensible argument that, you know, COVID's still having an impact on sort of day-to-day goings-on. Clearly, it killed a lot of people and it's put back a lot of people's treatment. But that, you know, that actually has an impact, you know, on health. It has an impact on employment as well, because there's a lot of people sitting idle who wouldn't be, because they haven't had, whatever surgery it was that they needed.
And so it goes on and on. Phil's just been in touch with Devon. If you've been paying attention, you may have noticed that both Starmer and Wes Streeting have said 19% is unaffordable, which I think we did reflect that. But the point is they haven't said what is affordable or what they would settle on. And even if it was 10%, matching in today's inflation rate, that's still an awful lot of money because there are an awful lot of nurses.
Yes.
And then you get every other public, you know, every other public sector worker would want the same because, yeah. You know, if you clap the nurses, you clap the teachers and so it goes on.
And it's a very politicised area, health. It's always been Labour's best sort of weapon to attack the Tories with. And that, to a degree, has made it difficult to get cross-party kind of consensus on how you go about dealing with this. But, you know, the other interesting thing from Sunak immediately talking about Wales and A&E times there is that that is wildly popular with his own backbenchers who say, yeah, look at you lot, Labour, you run Wales and it's always a mess.
We're a mess, but so are you.
So are you.
And then
up there. And that sort of cheers them up. Yeah. And, you know, as ever at Prime Minister's Question, some of it is for the voter out there, some of it is for the sort of cognoscenti like us to sort of mark them as they go forward. But a lot of it is about the people sitting behind them and whether they're leaving for their Christmas break thinking, that bloke's doing all right, actually, we'll give him a bit more time, or thinking he's, you know, getting his backside handed to him on a weekly basis. And I would say on this week, he's been a bit more sure-footed in his replies than he has been probably for the last 2 weeks.
And actually, it's one of those things, because he's not been doing it, to be fair to him, he's only just overtaken Liz Truss. He's not been doing it
for that long.
Yeah. And so as a result, you know, you build up this sort of well of knowledge and you become more confident.
He's still got, you know, 2.5 months to go before he moves up to being the, you know, the third shortest serving
he's
prime minister.
He's George Canning.
George Canning, yes. 119 days.
Yeah. One for the nerds there. Right, let's see how this all winds up. Are we going to get non-doms? Are we going to get nurses? Are we going to get... please, let's get a... For old time's sake, a mention of Jeremy Corbyn. Let's go back to the House of Commons. It's question number 6 from Keir Starmer.
Under the last Labour government, we had fair pay for nurses and no strikes. Yeah. So I won't be taking lectures from him about that.
Order.
Lindsay Hoyle.
You promised to behave. Don't give me a Christmas present you won't want. Come on, Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, this is our final PMQs of the year. So I hope you will part... Oh, really? I hope you will... Mr. Speaker, what I was going to say was I hope you will pass on all of our thanks, at least on this side, to all those who kept our House and our democracy working. Yeah. And I want to finish this year thinking about our friends in Ukraine. As a result of Putin's barbaric assault on their freedom, millions will spend Christmas in sub-zero temperatures, without heating, electricity or hot water. Their suffering is unimaginable, but their bravery is awe-inspiring. So will the Prime Minister join me in saying that whatever other difficulties and disagreements we have across this dispatch box, we are and will remain united in our unwavering support for Ukraine's freedom, its liberty and its victory.
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, can I join with the honourable gentleman in thanking and paying tribute to all the staff of the House for the fantastic work that they do to support all of us? And I appreciate his comments on Ukraine. It has been a point of incredible unity across this House and indeed the country, something that we can all be proud of in our country, that we have stood behind Ukraine at its hour of need. And as I said yesterday, this Christmas, many families will be laying an extra place at their Christmas table, and that speaks to the generosity and compassion of our nation, and long may that continue.
Oh, an outbreak of cheery, festive consensus at the end. Quite smart. I mean,
if you're smart by Starmer.
Very cynical. Very smart by Starmer. Completely change the subject. Go for something you can't. And then whatever pre-planned.
Yeah. No clip for Rishi.
No clip for Rishi at the end of the news, because he couldn't do, presumably, his attack on you propped up Jeremy Corbyn and your European Medicines Agency. We'd still be in lockdown now. None of that. Really smart politics by Keir Starmer.
Yeah, and to go on Ukraine, you know, you were saying what we've come a long way in a year. We've come a long way in a couple of years, really. You know, unimaginable that Corbyn would have made comments like that about unity or about involvement in a foreign war, and, you know, emblematic of where Starmer has positioned the Labour Party. So clever in a range of ways, I think.
So as we head into Christmas, then, it's our last time that we'll be together this year, Tim, I assume.
Yeah, I didn't get invited on the cruise, Matt, so, you know, chances to bond further were denied to me.
I think it was like pilots. Only one of us could be aboard at any one time for safety reasons. Who, going into Christmas, Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, will be the happiest?
Oh, Starmer's much happier than Sunak, no question about that. But Sunak's still alive, and as we, you know, he's now lasted longer than Liz Truss. And more importantly, he's in a much better position than Liz Truss was at any point in her premiership. He has stopped the bleeding. He's sort of stabilised things. He's taken it down, the temperature down a notch or two. And he's bought himself a bit of time. And, you know, I mentioned it earlier, there was no mention of it at PMQs. But if inflation has topped out now and is going to begin to fall, then, you know, that won't have an immediate effect on people's lives, because all that means is that things get more expensive slightly slower than they were doing. But in terms of, you know, the big picture, you can start, the Tories will be able to start weaving a narrative next year that things are getting a bit better, that we've, you know, we've all been in it and suffered the pain, and now there might be something politically to show for it. His big challenge is to survive to the local elections and get through those without, you know, Boris Johnson re-emerging as a credible threat to his leadership. And if he can get through that, then, you know, he's probably going to still be there at the general election. But Starmer, you know, began the year, you know, not that far ahead, and has had a good year. You know, he found it quite difficult to attack Boris Johnson. He didn't quite know which way to come at him a lot of the time. Boris Johnson made it very easy for him with Partygate and, you know, some of the other gaffes and mistakes over the handling of some of those sleaze issues. And, you know, he's seen off two prime ministers. He's got his party in a decent position, who from time to time are able to lead the way, both on the economy and on wider policy. And his party's now pretty united behind him. So, you know, Starmer's had a very good year, and, you know, Sunak has gone from being the golden child at the start of the year to making a mess of things in his spring budget, to, you know, his wife being embarrassed over non-domery, being humiliatingly defeated by Liz Truss, and then bouncing straight back and making, so far, a sort of decent grown-up fist of being Prime Minister. He's had a pretty reasonable year as well, but he's behind and he knows it, and you know, there are still questions in Tory ranks about whether he's got the dynamism to turn them around. Yeah. There aren't so many people talking about Starmer's dynamism now, because it's not what's required. It's looking like a prime minister, and so far he's beginning to look like he knows how to sort of answer those questions.
Tim Shipman, stay there, because I'm sorry to break the news. We don't have Ian Blackford.
Oh, I know. Well, we didn't have Ian Blackford last week. This is what you missed. It was the great historic occasion.
Stephen Flynn.
He was quite the edgy customer. I'll miss the humble crofter.
The humble crofter is off humbly crofting. So we'll get Stephen Flynn next, and the best of the rest. Tim Shipman, chief political commentator of the Sunday Times, is still here. And for the first time for me, because I never mentioned I wasn't here last week, no Ian Blackford. Sad times. Instead, we've got the new SNP leader in Westminster, Stephen Flynn.
I wish to join with the Prime Minister and the Leader of Opposition in extending my party's thoughts to all of those involved in the terrible tragedy in the Channel this morning. Yeah. Mr Speaker, thanks to positive and proactive negotiations between the Scottish Government and Unite and Unison Health Unions, a pay settlement has been reached and strike action averted. Yep. By stark contrast, the UK Health Secretary appears completely unwilling to negotiate with unions on pay, and strike action is very much still on the table. Shame. So may I ask the Prime Minister, when will he see the error of his ways and follow the Scottish Government's lead?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Well, Mr Speaker, I'm glad the UK Government was able to provide £1.5 billion in extra funding to the Scottish Government for public services. The Health Secretary and other ministers have engaged fully, not just with the unions, but with an independent pay-setting process, which takes the politics out of the process and ensures that we can meet those independent requirements with a fair pay deal.
Here we are. We were talking about that earlier on, the fact that Scotland had averted the nurses' strike, and Stephen Flynn trying to make some political capital from it.
And Sunak responding with the sort of unionist argument, well, you're giving them the money we've given you, so bravo for the union.
Everyone's happy. Everyone's done their bit. Yep. Right, let's go back to the House of Commons now. This is a question from the Labour MP, Dame Angela Eagle.
This year, the Tory party has given us 5 education secretaries, 4 chancellors, 3 prime ministers, 2 leadership coups. And Mr Speaker, the Partridge has had to sell the pear tree to pay the gas.
But that's better.
It's definitely the winner.
The best joke we've had today.
Isn't it the case that after a year of Tory chaos, incompetence and self-indulgence, the best Christmas present the Prime Minister could give to the British people is a general election? Yeah!
Mr Speaker, they're happier with that than before, Mr Speaker. But all I'd say, when it comes to what the British people need this Christmas, Mr Speaker, in order to ease the disruption on their lives, the best thing that the party opposite could do is tell their union bosses to call off these damaging strikes.
There we are, everyone's happy. Decent joke from Angela Eagle.
I mean, yeah, that's proper, isn't it? You know, and in fact, it was so proper that I've had about 6 different people send it to me even as we were listening.
What's slightly annoying about it is I was writing a script for something for next week and it had almost the same gag in it, so I shall have to have a revisit.
I'm sure you can make it even
How's
funnier.
Your review of 2022 coming along?
Yeah, need to get on with that, really.
When will we see that? Is that this week or next week?
There's going to be, I think, it won't be this week. But I'm working on something that's a sort of a bit of an essay, and I'm also working on something that's much more lighthearted.
So when do we see your shipment awards?
I would think one for Christmas and one for New Year.
Very good. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Tim Shipman, throughout 2022.
What a year we've had.
Who knows what next year will bring?
I hope it just brings less. That's all I would say. Just slightly less.
Just dial it down slightly less. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. We bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcasts from.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is brought to you by Luton Rising, owners of London Luton Airport, the UK's most socially impactful airport. Find out more at lutonrising.org.uk.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.